Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today's guest, Rodessa Jones, says she's an artist who is also a social activist. She's not interested in art for art's sake. She's interested in art that saves lives. For more than 25 years, Rodessa Jones has worked to give a voice to marginalized communities, including women in prisons around the globe and participants in the Women's HIV program at UCSF's Medical Center. Rodessa is director of the award-winning Medea Project, Theater for Incarcerated Women. In 2008, the Medea Project joined forces with UCSF's Women's HIV Clinic to create theater that explores what it means to be living with HIV today. For the past 4 years, the Medea Project HIV Circle has performed shows around the Bay Area, sharing the truth and releasing the stigma of what it means to be female and living with the virus. In January, San Francisco Mayor Ed Lee presented Rodessa with the Mayor's Art Award and described her as an artistic powerhouse whose work has transformed and saved lives. Rodessa's current performance, The Resurrection of She, is showing now at the Brava Theater tonight through Sunday in San Francisco's Mission District. The Resurrection of She chronicles Rodessa's own life through storytelling, dance, song, and visual imagery. It's an amazing performance. 15 instruments are on stage. She dives into the realities of being Black and female in America today. And today we are so happy to be joined by Rodessa Jones, who is director of the award-winning Medea Project and co-artistic director of the San Francisco-based performance company Cultural Odyssey. Hi, Rodessa. It's great to see you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for coming back. I saw your performance last weekend, and I just loved it. What I love is that you pierce the audience in 1 minute and then have us kind of laughing and dancing in the next. Have you ever before shared so much personal information about yourself in one performance?
Not in one performance, but my career, I think, and my connection with the community is rooted in the fact that I've always opened up and shared something that was very real and very personal, and I find that it has been universal, and that's all of the communities. That's the women's community. That's the gay community. That is like people who necessarily don't even really do theater, but then all of a sudden, because their children are in jail, they'll end up coming to see the Medea Project. Mm. And inside of that, I have actually been performing with the Medea Project the last few years. So I just try to bring it, as they say.
Yeah.
You know? I just try to bring it.
You definitely bring it. The first time I learned about you was seeing the Medea Project many years ago. And it was amazing to watch because you actually work with women in prison. And these women were, quote, allowed to get out,
yes,
perform on stage. And I'll never forget this because there were guards standing on the stage. And they told us, be sure to leave right after the performance so the women can hug their families and then go back to prison.
Yes, yes.
It just makes it so real.
Well, God bless Michael Hennessy, who was the sheriff for the county for so long. He just retired a couple of years ago. Michael Hennessy really believed that art could save lives. Art could change lives. And I arrived at this place at this time. And I would go in and tell him what I was thinking. And he would say, okay, well, how are we going to do it? You know, and I'd say, and Spirit would tell me, you know, as back to She, Spirit has been such an amazing part of my journey. And not to say it isn't with other people, but I'm not talking about any particular God or goddess. I'm just saying, okay, Spirit, open the way, help me here. You know, I guess I would say I pray and I meditate constantly. Mm-hmm. And when you're working in prisons and you hear, first of all, I'm blessed that women will come and they'll tell me their story. You know, seeing She and working on the end, it was Idris Sakamore said, look, you've got to like give us just these different stories from around the globe. And all of those stories are from the mouths of women from Africa to, you know, Alaska. And one bit that I do is from a young woman from Pakistan who was arrested here for drugs or something. And I met her at the city jail a couple of years ago, Wajma, you know, just amazing writer. And when she started writing, I got her to talk about the culture and the art from Pakistan, from Afghanistan, which we as American women, you know, unless you're a scholar, you don't know. And here she is in jail talking about where she's from. And she's kind of amazed that I'm allowing this because, you know, you can be seen as a pariah. You know, it's like, yeah.
We were talking before the show about the importance of theater and the importance of independent media to bring these stories to light. At a time when things move so fast and we've got this digital technology, talk a little bit about the power of telling the story. And how has that changed since you started in theater over 25 years ago?
Well, it's changed so much in that there's room for the soloist. And I think right away of even Richard Pryor, the comedian, Robin Williams, my girl, Lily Tomlin, giving us permission to explore your own story. 20, 25 years ago, we were all struggling to be like the dominant culture, or right down to, I remember trying to get an agent, and I was told that I couldn't wear braids, that I had to press and straighten my hair. I looked more bookable. And since then, though, as we move into the 21st century and the face of the country has changed, cultural diversity is real. We are all up in here, as they say. Mm-hmm. And what us as first people, that's brown and black people, have always brought is this sitting around a campfire. And these stories are a way to save the nation, to save our children, to lead our children. So they you need to know where you've been so that you can understand the possibilities of where you can go. And I think that as I've come of age, that's where I am now, where before I really would have liked to have been, quote, a movie star, but we only had one. That was Cicely Tyson, and she doesn't show up very much. I mean, they didn't know what to do with colored girls in those days, but I loved clowning, I loved storytelling, and I loved San Francisco stages, the laboratory here. And I grew into being who I consequently have blossomed into this amazing woman, I think.
Yes.
The Legend of Lily Overstreet was a piece that I did about nude dancing in America. And I got a lot of flack from people that you're not supposed to tell, you see. You're not supposed to tell. But as we back to media, what else are we going to talk about? Let us share stories with each other. Because once you hear somebody's story, it changes your relationship to that person. It really does. And working with incarcerated women, I had the resurrection of She grew into being because I thought, okay, all of the things that I have like laid down for them, the rules of what you know now, what do you want me to know about you? How do you honor yourself? For me, I thought, okay, I want to turn that on me and really pull all the stories together, build new stories, but speak from that place. I want to speak to the teacher in me and see what I find. And that's what you have with the resurrection of She.
And in your latest one woman show that's now showing at the Brava Theater in San Francisco, you do have excerpts of your experiences performing around the globe.
Yes.
As a young woman. There are great photos of you as a young woman. Gorgeous then, gorgeous now. Your opinion of the power of art, how has that changed over the last two decades?
Well, I just believe that the people who've mostly moved me have been people right down to Roberta Flack. He was, what is the song? He was strumming my pain. He was singing my life. And I remember hearing the song on popular radio and thinking, I've had that experience of someone being able to sing a song that spoke to me as well. So it began there for me. And then the whole idea of how it just... As a teacher in the jails, the realer I was with the women I worked with, and I said, come on, y'all, don't mess with me. I need for you to give it up. Give it up for real, because it's not just about you. And people would say, oh, you want me to really tell you what's going on? I said, yeah. I remember working with Rosario Dawson. I directed Any One of Us for Eve Ensler in New York at Lincoln Center. And Rosario, and that was Felicia Rashad and Shirley Knight. I mean, the cast was amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm saying, they read for me because they're all fabulous and pop, and they were late, and they were like, okay, we'll read for you. And I said, no, that was cute. I said, but we got to bring it. And it was Rosario Dawson, who I think is Dominican, she's Latin. She's a gorgeous brown woman. She looked up and she said, oh, you really want us to come for that audience? I said, yes, I do. I want you to indict New York tonight, because women just don't end up in prison on their own. A whole lot of stuff happens. And she got it. She changed the energy in the room. She said, okay, because I said, I want you to begin in Spanish. And she did this piece that a young woman had written about, You Can't Live My Life, which inside of this poem, this young lady tells us all that she's HIV positive. She was 19 years old. And I said to Rosario, I want you to begin in Spanish. And she was like, you do? I said, oh, yeah. Yeah, everybody's got to sit up tonight. So I feel like theater is this medium where we can be shamans. Thank you, Mr. Hurt, for calling me a goddess. I thought I knew. I didn't know you knew. But I think all of that comes into play with the kind of theater that I think is important. You know, how can we, if we ask people to gather around, you better have something to say, because we're so hungry. It's so, as you and I were talking earlier, there's just so much going on, and it doesn't, and it's not going to get any easier. Mm. So how can we comfort each other with the story? How can we share how can we strategize with the story? And also women, how do we save our lives by at least honoring our story? You know, it's so important for us to find strength and resolve. Yeah.
What do you mean when you say it's not going to get any easier?
Oh, well, rape is just real. Mm. You know, rape is real. It's dying time in the world. You think about Syria. I was listening to South Africans. All these South African soldiers were killed when they went to deal with some African country, another African country. There's 6 children that were killed in England this past week by their mother and father who were doing some strange thing around trying to find ground to be more powerful. I mean, it's just gun. Newtown, and people want to bury their heads, you see. I still get flack because I talk about where I've been. Mm. And because it's the black question in this culture. I'm an African-American woman, and those wounds, no, we do not live in a post-racial society. And I'm not, if I'm being racial, so be it. But I will say, as Spike Lee would say, I cannot deny somebody a job. I can't decide that you can't live in my community or give you a higher rate on your mortgage because you don't look like me. So I don't think I'm being racist. I'm being informative. And as you said, I can take the knife in, but then we all realize that it was only a magical knife.
Well, you do, because in your piece, one of the sections did focus on slavery and the image of the young girl who was, quote, allowed to play on deck, and yes. She watched these gorgeous birds flying in the sky, and then you just pierce us because we've got this great visual of this young girl who's just being a girl.
Yes.
And then you talk about her reality.
Yes, yes, and how she was less important than the birds. And you know, that's E.G. Sacamore's great, 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 great grandmother's story from his family lore. That's from his family's chest of stories that you must carry. We must pass on the stories to our children about where we've been, and shame has no place in that, because each one of us is special and individual unto ourselves. Yeah.
And Idris Akamore is the founder of Cultural Odyssey, and he is a musician, an amazing performer. He plays many of the 15 instruments that are on stage with David Molina. I couldn't even probably name half of those instruments. I mean, it was incredible to see.
Yeah, it's, Idris has collected instruments, you know, and he's a musicologist, you know, he went to Antioch College to study music, part of his education was to travel, I guess for a year maybe, and he went to Africa and studied with the King's drummers in, I can't remember if it was Ghana, but he just absorbs all this stuff. You should see his house, all the instruments that are hanging on the walls and everything.
At least 15 instruments. We're speaking today with Rodessa Jones. She's co-artistic director of Cultural Odyssey and director of the award-winning Medea Project Theater for Incarcerated Women. Her current performance, The Resurrection of She, is showing at the Brava Theater tonight through Sunday in San Francisco's Mission District. Highly recommend this. You can find more information about this on our Facebook page and yourcallradio.org. And we're talking with Rodessa about the 25 years she has spent giving a voice to marginalized communities, and also the power of art to really give a voice to communities like women in prison, women living with HIV. And how do you think theater, art, and storytelling can give a voice to people on the margins of our society? We'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. If you're familiar with Rodessa's work, we'd love to hear from you about how it's affected you. If you work as an artist, or if you just like to go to plays that really focus on these kinds of issues, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. I also wanted to talk to you about your personal story because I guess as someone who loves art and goes to a lot of theater, when I learn more about you, I guess the level of respect just goes up because, again, the power of stories. And your mother, for example, pregnant 19 times.
Yes, yes. And 12
she had
of us lived.
12 children.
Yeah, yeah. And she was so wonderful. She believed and power of giving life. Now I can say that. Back then I was like, lady, you're out of your mind. But she would say to, there was four girls in the family, eight boys, and you couldn't have a headache. My mother would say, well, you know, it's probably time to have another youngin'. And it's like, huh? You know, it's like, or she loved pregnant women, and she would look at them and she could tell, like, are they getting enough sleep? Are they eating too much sugar? She loved children. I mean, she just loved round babies. And she would say, oh, take it away. I'm going to bite it. And at the same time, her life was not easy at all, you know, and there was a power in being the mother of so many children. And at the same time, my mother was fierce. I remember just my mother would come to the school, and if she thought we were being mistreated, She would do the whole story. She'd say, you know, this ain't slavery time. Mm. She said, I lived in slavery time. And my mother did. My mother remembered being gathered in a wagon in Georgia and being taken to lynchings. This was how the farmer kept them in control. They had to go and see this happen. All of the people that worked on his land. And we're talking about, this was, I mean, we're talking the 1920s and 1920s, the 30s. They were taken still to see lynchings. Yeah, yeah. So at the same time, she had a great heart. Dennis Riley, the man that I came to California with, Irish anarchist, gorgeous black Irishman, just beautiful. He loved my mother. He and my mother would have these amazing conversations. My mother was just fascinated that I'd be involved with a white man. But at the same time, he knew all of this. And so they would cut the greens together. They'd talk about cooking. They'd talk about where she had been. And even after he and I split, she'd say to me, well, guess who came to see me today? And it would be Riley. He would have dropped by just to see her. So I think and hope that I brought a life and a vastness to my family center just in the life that I dared to live. And I think that's what happens with live theater on stage when it's rooted in truth.
I also love the stories you tell about your father because you can apply so much of the importance of your relationship to what we're dealing with today. And you really, it seemed like you wanted the audience to know that it's so important for fathers to hear their children.
Yes.
And your father heard you.
Yes, he was the first, I feel like he was the first man to listen. And I don't know, he wasn't an educated man, he wasn't a scholar, but he just realized this child is opening herself up to me. And I felt that connection with him, that he was listening, and for the rest of my life, I have looked for it in the eyes and in the conversation of particularly men, being the heterosexual reality, but also in the world. Are you listening to me? Mm. And I feel like women are not listened to. Back to rape, back to the idea that This congressman could stand and debate rape versus a legitimate rape. Where are we? What about the shame or Sandra Fluke, you know, being demonized by Ross Limbaugh? And I'm thinking, where is her father? How is her father responding to this man maligning his child, his daughter? You know, it's like my dad just decided that I don't know if he and my mother were arguing about money the morning he gets the watermelons, which is the story in the show.
Yeah.
But he just says, okay, my children are going to have as much watermelon as they want.
Right.
You know?
Which one do you want? I'm going to crack it open for you. Yes. Well, where do you think this comes from? Because I remember a couple weeks ago, I saw this very drunk girl on the sidewalk.
Oh,
all her stuff was out in front of her. And I said, you've got to put your things in your purse. Where are your friends? Helped her back to the bar. She said, why are you helping me? Why are you being so nice to me?
Mm-hmm.
And then StoryCorps had this great piece a couple weeks ago about a woman who removes tattoos.
Mm.
And she was talking about how men force their partners to have their names on their bodies.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really intense. And she was helping a woman. And the same question, why are you being so nice to me? Why are you helping me? I don't deserve this. Where does that come from?
I think it's the whole idea of you are a girl is less than until she proves otherwise. And then the standards that have been set up, at least when I was coming up, they don't last. Your hair, your figure, be nice. You know, women still, a date rape is so rooted in us being nice. You know, it hopes that something good will come of it. Or back to rape. You know, there is a thing on the internet now about the whole percentages around what happens when somebody, if you dare to accuse somebody, largely people don't go to jail. You're still left to feel like you've done something wrong. So it says to you that girls are like 50,000 women disappearing in India. It's like girls don't matter. I mean, as much as I love my mother was so invested in, she says, you're looking at a woman with 8 sons. She would say that to people. We're all standing there. It's like, I have 8 sons. And then she'd turn to one of us girls and say, and go get me some water. Go. Mm-hmm. And also in the African-American community, and I think maybe the subterranean communities, the marginal communities, a little boy is mama's little man, you know, and a little girl is, you know, like a little girl is simply the servant, sit down, you ain't grown, shut up, where that's mama's little man right there. And then you're like, hey, baby, this is mama's little papa. And it's like the daughter's standing there looking, wanting all of this attention. So I think it's rooted in coming from there. Why are you being nice to me? Because nobody else has been.
Mm. So where does your strength come from and your power?
The theater has helped me a lot. Mm. But I had a mother who said, be a woman, don't be no dress. And my father would say, my children are my garden. You know, my daughters are my flowers, you know. And I think also my brothers, the upside of having 8 brothers was that they forced me to wrestle. I mean, it was like you have to, like, my brother Azel, who now lives in Nevada, he'd always say, take me down. He'd come behind me and he'd say, okay, take me down. He said, get away, get away, get away. And my mother would say, stop that kind of roughhousing. But I'm so glad. And I think the work I've done, you know, the work that I've done in the world has given me immense strength and belief and culture. And I survived. I'm alive. You know, my daughter turns 50 in January and my granddaughter's 23. And they're all right. They're okay.
And you had your daughter when you were 16.
Yes, I did.
You talk about that experience on the stage also.
Yes. And I had not been a part of my plan to have children. It had not been. But I'm glad that my mother and father both told me I'd be happy. That they said, you're going to understand this by and by. You have to keep your baby. And I did. But my body, my will said, that's it. No more babies. Yeah.
We're speaking with Rodessa Jones, co-artistic director of the San Francisco-based performance company Cultural Odyssey. She's also director of the award-winning Medea Project, Theater for Incarcerated Women. Her latest solo performance, The Resurrection of She, is showing now at the Brava Theater in San Francisco tonight through Sunday. And we'd love to hear from you. Talk about the power of theater and giving a voice to the most marginalized in our society. It's your call. We'll be back after this.
When the moon's kind of dreamy, starry-eyed and dreamy, and nights are luscious and long.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio. You can join today's discussion by calling 866-798-8255 or email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Programming here on KALW is supported in part by An Evening with David Sedaris, Sunday night, May the 5th at the War Memorial Opera House here in San Francisco. An evening of all new readings and recollections, tickets and information at davidsedarisontour.com.
And tells you sleeping is wrong. If love goes a-thirsting till you feel like bursting, then nothing.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. We'll discuss coverage of the sequestration cuts, which are affecting communities across the country. The Washington Post just had a story about how cancer patients on Medicare are being turned away from clinics because of these cuts. So we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the fastest growing low-wage job market in the U.S. and the saber-rattling between the U.S. and North Korea. As usual, Fridays are always packed with information, Rodessa. That's tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we're speaking with Rodessa Jones. For more than 25 years, she has worked to give a voice to marginalized communities, including women in prison around the globe and participants in the Women's HIV program at UCSF's Medical Center. She is co-director of Cultural Odyssey, director of the Medea Project, Theater for Incarcerated Women, and she's currently performing The Resurrection of She, showing now at the Brava Theater tonight through Sunday. She chronicles Rodessa's life through storytelling, song, dance, and visual imagery. As I said before, you will be treated to Idris Akamor and David Molina on stage playing at least 15 instruments. And you can find more at yourcallradio.org. And we'd love to hear from you. If you're an artist, if you work in the arts, if you're a lover of the arts, talk about the power of art and social activism and how art and storytelling can really give a voice to the most marginalized in our society. If you saw a performance recently that really stood out for you, if there's a company that does this kind of work that you'd like to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. Also, we've done so many shows over the years just about our society and its value of art and how we just don't really put that many resources into art. We'll talk about a new initiative in the state of California to actually increase the California Arts Council. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Rodessa, during the break, we were talking about just the reaction to these kinds of shows and, you know, how people react and interact with art and how that's really changed over the years. What would you say about that?
Well, I remember when the Medea Project first hit, the Medea Project Theater for Incarcerated Women, and it was packed. But then there was always a group of people who'd say, well, oh, it's so heavy. This one of the dangers is that we look at entertainment. Art gets the art of expression gets lost when people think about stage. Comedy is very big, and I love comedy myself, but it is people feed on comedy. They want to release. And the other side of it all, though, is like Harvey Keitel once said, be interested in all things and all people. And then Sekou Sundiata, the poet, said the best kinds of theater is figuring out a way to talk about the hard stuff. And I believe in public communion. And I think that a lot of people have gotten so far away from it. I mean, with social media, with television, movies where people can sort of sit and watch constantly and not be expected to feel, really. And I think that it's because we can be afraid of our feelings. And it's okay. It's okay to cry. It's okay to get mad. It's okay. The opening night of She, last Thursday night, there were a wonderful group of women from a women's reentry program. Elizabeth Summers, a writer here in the city, brought this group of women. And they were so vocal. And people get angry about that. Mm. And it's like, but But I think theater is a sort of a religious experience. It should be. There should be a washing over. There should be a coming out change. There should be a resurrection, if nothing but for a minute. Your eyes have seen something else. You've shed some kind of a spiritual skin. And I think that we don't know quite what to do with that. And we don't know what to do with art. You know, we're so bombarded, all of us, with there's too much information going down. But please come out and see She. You'll love it. If you got a question, I love to talk about anything. So
and
call
she
the,
can.
Call the station.
Well, and so what is it like for you when you sat down, for example, to put She together, mm-hmm. when you think about, you know, how much heavy material to include and how much light material when the audience is clapping and dancing. Mm-hmm. What's that process like for you?
Well, Idris Akamor is my secret weapon, you know, because I can be very dramatic and dark and I have so much to say. And I'm blessed with my partner is a musician, you know, it's like, and male. From Chicago. I'm very, very rural. He's very, very urban. And truthfully, I say he helped a lot. But I have rims of stuff that didn't go into the show. We cut the show by 20 minutes because we really wanted to engage more people, I think. We really, because there are people that do follow me around. And at the same time, Idris was reminding me of some of these stories I've told before. He said, but you know, you told them 20, 30 years ago, and now the audience is very different. And all of this became a part of it. And then working with Idris and David, the music became very primary. So I ended up singing more. I sing more in the show than I ever have before. And so that had to have its own space and air around it. And then what piece of row lore can lead into this and into that. And it just organically, it sort of fell together too, as well.
In terms of the heavy stuff, what are you hoping to accomplish? I mean, you talk about slavery in the play, menstruation, rape, pregnancy at a young age, you know, pretty heavy stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what are you hoping people walk away
with? I think we forget.
Yeah.
I think that the world forgets. Back to 50,000 women disappearing in India. Back to this whole abortion discussion that's going on in South Dakota. Women, we have got to step up. I mean, if nobody else takes to the streets, the female energy in this culture should be saying, oh, no. Hell no. And I mean, maybe I'm an old lefty. I don't know, but I feel like this is a part of the charge of an artist. It's like to remind us where we are. Where are we at, y'all? And it's like, what are we leaving for our daughters and consequently for our sons if we don't step up and speak out for ourselves? And we're reminded how sacred all the menstruation is sacred. It's just sacred. Our bodies are sacred. You know, so I guess that's, and if it's heavy, so be it. But to me, I'm 64 now, so I no longer menstruate, but I even miss it sometimes. You know, I love being a woman. You know, I mean, it's like, and at the same time, I meet so many young women in this age of hip hop. They'll strut around like guys. Even if, you know, there's always my little stud muffins who I love. They're out looking for girls. Okay, fine. That's a whole nother conversation. But then there's so many girls that just want to, they would rather be or pose as men. And they think that therein lies power. And the world has said that to us. But there's so much mystical, magical power in the female, the whole female origin, the female cell, the breasts, the babies, the menstruation, the kind of survival that the little girl in my first story in the show, I don't know if a male would have been able to survive that, you know, and come through it and arrive as Rhodessa Jones in the 21st century. Yeah.
We have an email from Marion who says, thank you, Rhodessa. We are discussing the idea of speaking truth to power in Anne Fagillon's theater solo class at CSUEB, and it's fantastic. How do we, as the younger generation of female storytellers, continue this work? And she says in the class, she often cites your work and she cannot wait to see the show. As she goes on to say, as one who's marginalized on so many layers, female, black, dark-skinned, educated, single mom, society tells me every day I'm not welcomed to the bargaining table, but women like Rodessa keep me going. I had a fantastic father who told me I mattered every day. This is where it starts. The theater she does speaks truth to power. I thank you because not everyone has the guts to talk about the hard stuff and the ugly stuff in our society.
Yeah, and I think it's what drama's made of, the hard stuff, the dark stuff. You know, I lost the love of my life, and he was 2 years ago now, to bone cancer. Mexican man who worked himself to death, and he works, and he was so careful to be. He was a lovely, elegant, articulate man who had a wonderful sense of his own history. At the same time, he in this country, he made sure that he was always proper. And he was always, he didn't err on the side of trouble, didn't drink, didn't smoke. Well, we had drank tequila. And he told me great stories. And then, boom, he got bone cancer and died. It was like, and I think it surprised him more than anything because he so loved life. And he was not documented in this country. And he was 25 years, he told me, just before he passed away. He said, you know, I've been ducking and dodging and keeping my head down for 25 years. And they found the tumors right up here on his shoulders. It was the first ones they found. And I think about how the work is so important for the spirit of him, you know, and here he was. And I was blessed that in California, in this bastion of cultural differences, I meet this man who across centuries and time and cultures, we see each other. And it's like, hey, what's going on with you? And I feel like it could only have happened because I was open to the realities of the world. And I thank the person who just wrote. I think it's always about truth to power, you know, and you've got to be willing. Somebody already died for us. Yeah, there's so many women that history doesn't know who died for us. And if it's just art and being on a stage, well, then so be it. You know, so be it. And if they're going to come for me tonight, they'll be for you by morning. But I don't think that's going to happen, and not in this culture of ours. But we have to trust in that and also take on our power. As young women, you have to be willing to take on your power. But don't forget to be respectful of an older woman, even if she's not being respectful. You know, you gotta like set her in line, like, ma'am. I'm very good at yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, you know. And it surprises women because age is not a nice thing. We want to pretend that we're not our age. We want to be younger for what? And young is what, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
I bet you have more energy than a lot of younger women.
Probably.
At 64 on the stage for 2.5 hours. You brought up a number of points, and I want to ask you, there's an exhibit at the Commonwealth Club called Silence of Women, and it's an exhibit about just women who don't have a voice, and it's trying to encourage women to use their voice. How do you think women should respond to what we're facing right now? Because at this exhibit, they have these placards. For example, one of them says, in the U.S., 301 anti-abortion measures were enacted between 1995 and 2001. 86% of U.S. counties are not served by an abortion provider. Worldwide, more than 50% of the population of women over age 15 cannot read or write. How should women respond to what's happening right now?
As I said before, I think that we have to find a way to take it to the streets. If we have book clubs on a Friday night, let us gather together on a Friday night and go and go out into the streets and just talk to other women. I mean, maybe that's too simplistic, but it's like, let us talk to each other. As all the information you just shared with me, we should find ways to share it with each other. I live in Noe Valley, and I had an article in the paper, and all of a sudden I'm aware of all these people that have been seeing me all these years but not necessarily talking to me, and now they all want to talk to me about something, and I'm trying to find ways to make that exchange important, you know, to say something. People blink. I mean, when Barack Obama was first running for president, people came up to me and said, well, what do you think? Should I vote for him? And I said, yeah, sure, vote for him. You know, it's like, and then this past election, they said, well, you know, they inferred that, well, the guy didn't really work out. You know, he didn't change the timbre of the times. But back to your question, I think it's about finding ways to communicate with women. You go into schools under a health program and talk to young women. I talk to young women all the time. They don't always like it, you know. My granddaughter has friends that she went to high school with. They're having babies. And I'm saying, well, okay, this is the last baby, isn't it? And go, well, yeah. And I'd say, no, let's bring it down a notch. This should be the last baby. Raising children is not easy. It's just not. I said, take it, you know, try to take what you know and share it with people. It is your business. You know, it's like, oh, I ain't involved. Yes, you are. Whether you know it or want to be, in the end, somehow it comes back to what you should have said, what you should have done, you know, what you could do. And there's always somebody waiting to be led, to be helped. Yeah.
We're speaking with Rodessa Jones. She's been working to give a voice to marginalized communities, including women in prisons around the globe and women living with HIV. And she is performing The Resurrection of She at the Brava Theater tonight through Sunday, an incredible performance. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And if you have any questions for Rodessa, like she said, she can talk about anything. Now is your chance to give her a call. If you want to talk about art, the power of art and social activism and giving a voice and really bringing up some of these difficult, messy subjects, because we really do need, and we do this almost every day on this show, at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. We have just over 10 minutes left, and you can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website. Because you talk a lot about history and stories, something I've been thinking a lot about lately, I like to read the obituary section in the newspaper. There are some amazing women dying that we've never heard of. And so I'm thinking, you know, not to be morbid, but this is reality. In the next 20 or so years, the majority of the civil rights activists, the gay rights activists, I mean, you name it, they're going to be gone.
They're going to be gone.
These amazing women. Well, I mean, how are you thinking about that at all? Because I just wonder what that means for my generation and the ones after mine.
Yes, I do think about it. And strangely enough, it kind of hit me with the death of my last uncle, who was 98 and who was buried last Saturday. And he lived in Florida. He was a minister. And I found out that my uncle had started an HIV program in his church in West Palm Beach, Florida. He has the Lighthouse Cafe for the homeless to feed. And I felt this connection with him. And so I feel like, yes, I think there's Women's Day. We should set up areas around the city where there's, I think, to lure young women in, cupcakes, tea, have makeshift tea tents around the city where, because I loved Eve Ensler's A Billion Rising. Mm-hmm. But how do we do it for, like you were saying, girls under 15 who are not educated?
Right.
Go into their, do you dare go into their community? I remember doing dancing nude at downtown, the legend of Lily Yovasee was born out of this experience. But I remember all these women who were so active and so vocal about what should not be done, but they would not. I said, why don't you come downtown and come in? I'll let you into the club that I work in and talk to the women. And they'd say, oh, no, I'm not. It's like, well, then what is all this about? You've got to love the people and you can't be afraid of the people. And back to reminding our daughters of who they are. This is the soil from which we all came. You know, as you were just talking, I was thinking of Dorothy Heights, who I met once many, many, many years ago. Or Ida B. Wells, whenever I think about lynching. And one of the women in my crew, I was telling the story of my aunt Willie Mae, and she said, well, tonight you talked about how this posse of white men were going to string her up, but you're talking about lynching, you know. I said, yeah, it happened. It happened. There, you know, we owe it to so many people to be as vocal and as present as possible. Yes.
Well, we've got full lines now, Rodessa, with about seven
All
minutes
right.
left. So let's hear from Beverly in San Francisco. Hi, Beverly. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Rodessa Beverly here. I applaud you. Quickly, I'm going to tell you, I started my career in so-called correctional forensic nursing at Chowchilla.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I had an intimate experience. I left after 3 months, came to San Quentin. I'm not going to go into how that ended. So I have an intimate, I'm on the outside looking in, and once I left, I never got over, I felt not effective. And I'm a woman of color. I was born in Tobago, in what was called the West Indies, and I've been to many countries, so I consider myself a world citizen, and always left with that yearning that I could do something. So I want to join your posse. I have the time. I think I have some money and the availability and a whole bunch of knowledge.
Oh, this is great. You can email me, rodessa@culturalodyssey.org, and we'll talk about it. But come and see my show.
You better. I was thinking of that today. Happy to be home and just hanging out.
And I love Tobago. Fabulous.
Well, it's been 40 years, but I'm sure I'll go back another time.
It's beautiful.
Lovely. Talk to you, and Rose, keep up the good work.
Oh, thank you, Beverly. And be sure to see the show, The Resurrection of She, showing tonight through Sunday at the Brava Theater in The Mission. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. Let's hear next from Esther in Santa Cruz. Hi, Esther. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to say how inspired I am and how gratified I am. I've been listening to you, Rose, since I've moved out here to Santa Cruz very recently from the East Coast. And you have a consistency of high-quality consciousness shows, and I appreciate it. And today I'm calling because I'm so moved that I cannot. Thank you for your wonderful work in art and in bringing these voices forward that we all need to hear and be reminded of, and empowering us to take our own visions and voices out.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Esther.
I created something called Earth Artistry, and I've been really kind of just not knowing how to get it out in the world. I have a ton of music and lyrics that have to do with our connection with the Earth, which is the female, you know, it's the mother, and with the universe. And these things that we disregard definitely at our own, I mean, not even risk, but I mean, the whole quality of life. So thank you. You've inspired me to find my guts and just take further steps to get this out in the world.
Thank you so much, Esther. Your call made my month. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you're out there listening. And thank you for calling. Let's hear next from Cynthia in Oakland. Hi, Cynthia.
Hi there. It is such a pleasure to hear Mr. Rodessa Jones on the air speaking today. She has inspired me since 1983. She and Culture Odyssey came to my college, and the performance changed my perspective of stage performance. It impacted me in a tremendous way. And for a long time, I had no idea who they were, but the images stayed in my mind. They informed me of rhythm, blues, jazz, and Africa. It was a wonderful rhythmic performance. And if it wasn't for a journal entry, maybe I read in my journal about 2 years ago, I would not have known that it was Culture Odyssey. For the longest time, I could not, and I wanted to know who they were. And I'm so happy that you still exist. You're over there, and I can come see you and talk to you. And I'm still inspired. I've seen a number of your promotions, and I really look forward to meeting you.
Please come.
Yeah, see her in action, Cynthia. It's amazing. 2.5-hour performance. Thank you so much for calling. A quick email from Erin. She says, my daughter is one. I have fretted ever since I found out I was having a girl.
Ooh.
About the world she's inheriting. I don't know how to change things in my limited sphere other than to be nice, smile at everybody, be polite, and try to teach my daughter to do the same thing, but also to be strong.
Yes, yeah. But expose her. Expose her to a lot of stuff. Be interested in her life. I feel like we have children. One of the other sides of this whole thing in the world is everybody, you know, the whole question of abortion and pregnancy and all this. But if you're going to have children, be interested in them. Grow them. Grow a child. That's how you create a thoroughbred. Be interested in that child, and particularly daughters. Daughters are amazing. They're so, and they'll come and clean up when you're sick faster than a son.
Yeah, I'm doing that for my mom this weekend. You do it regardless of how old you are. Thank you so much for calling, Erin. Let's go next to Jean in Central California. Hi, Jean. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm driving to a client's appointment with a client, and I had to pull over. I want to mention two things: the power of inspiration and the power of one person. Listening to Rodessa reminds me that it's still possible in this society of hugeness. I've spent the last year and a half in a public accountability project. People think they had a voice I saw wrongdoing, and I took it on. And it has been the most rewarding thing I've ever done. And so I know young people, you know, still they do have the notion. I think some of us who are older need to be reminded that the 60s ain't over, that it lives on, and those of us with a heart and a brain have an obligation.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for calling in. You know, this reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from MLK Jr., who was assassinated on this day in 1968.
That's right.
Yeah, and I just thought you would appreciate this one, Rodessa. Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter.
A woman. Amen.
So our remaining minutes, and thank you so much for calling in. What do you see in terms of the future of the arts? I do want to just quickly mention that there is a bill in the California Assembly that would increase funding for the arts, AB 580. Right now, the Arts Council gets only $1 million.
Yes,
we're like
yes.
number 49th in the country, and it would bring it up to $75 million.
Yes, where it should be. I think that art has and will play more of a central part in our lives. I mean, when you look at something like Youth Speaks, where it engages young people. I used to be very frustrated back in the day about trying to find funding for my prison project because it was so much about education and high school for kids. But I think it's all coming together. And like I said earlier, I think that women are organizing in different kinds of ways. And so all of the funding for the arts is going to be vital to telling those stories. The lady who just called about Earth and wanting to make songs and stories about that. And all of this is going to become a part of saving our lives as the human race. Art has always had a vital place, you know, and I feel like that's what's coming down, whether we like it or not. Because politics don't work. Religion is a bit too eclectic, but art is that parachute that will catch us all.
I actually got my number wrong. We're actually last. California is last. I was just looking at this California Arts Facebook page.
And speaking of art, support Brava. Mm. Brava's a theater center. It's having its own resurrection right now. And Stacy and Idris and Carla and the women who are working over there, they're doing a good job of Ellen Gavin grew this thing a long time ago, and these women have arrived.
Yeah.
And they're like troopers. They're like stormtroopers.
And supporting so many pieces about and by and for women.
Yes, and Stacy says, you know, she's about community involvement. So support Brava.
And support Rodessa Jones by seeing The Resurrection of She. It's showing tonight through Sunday at the Brava Theater in San Francisco's Mission District. Find more information, yourcallradio.org. Rodessa, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, families. It's always a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. Here's what's coming up on Your Call tomorrow. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss media coverage of the sequestration cuts, which are affecting communities across the country. We'll also talk about the fastest-growing low-wage job market in the U.S. and the saber-rattling between the U.S. and North Korea. We'll be joined by the Columbia Journalism Review's David K. Johnston, investigative journalist Donald Bartlett, and the Christian Science Monitor's Don Kirk. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Raz is on, and Ali Budner produced the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We'll be right back.